small change. Small change, my aunt said, as I put the obol on her tongue. I'll need more than that where I'm going. It is true that the change was very small. She looked exactly as she had looked a few hours before, except that she was not breathing. Goodbye, aunt, I said. I'm not going yet, she snapped. I always tried her patience. There are rooms in this house I've never even opened the door of. I did not know what she was talking about. Our house has two rooms. This obol tastes funny, she said after a long silence. Where did you get it? I did not want to tell her that it was a good luck piece, a copper sequin, not money, though it was round like a coin, which I had carried for a year or more in my pocket, ever since I picked it up by the gate of the bricklayer's yard. I had rubbed it clean, of course, but my aunt had a keen tongue, and it was trodden mud, dog turds, brick dust, and the inside of my pocket that she was tasting, along with the dry blood taste of copper. I pretended that I had not understood her question. I wonder you had it at all, my aunt said. If you have a penny in your pocket after a month without me, I'll be surprised. Poor thing. She would have sighed if she had been breathing. I had not known that she would continue to worry about me after she died. I began to cry. That's good, my aunt said with satisfaction. Just don't keep it up too long. I'm not going far now. I just want very much to find out what room that door leads to. She looked younger when she got up, younger than she was when I was born. She went across the room lightly and opened a door I had not known was there. I heard her say in a pleased, surprised voice, Lila! Lila was the name of her sister, my mother. For goodness sake, Lila, my aunt said, you haven't been waiting in here for 11 years. I could not hear what my mother said. I'm very sorry about leaving the girl, my aunt said. I did what I could. I tried my best. She's a good girl. But what will become of her now? My aunt never cried, and now she had no tears. But her anxiety over me made me cry again in alarm and self-pity. My mother came out of that new room in the form of a lace-wing fly and saw me crying. Tears taste salt to the living, but sweet to the dead. And they have a taste for sweets at first. I did not know all that then. I was just glad to have my mother with me, even as a tiny fly. It was a gladness the size of a fly. That was all there was left of my mother in the house, and she had got what she wanted, so my aunt went on. The room she was in was large and rather shadowy, lighted only by a skylight, like a storeroom. Along one wall stood distaffs full of spun flax, in a row, and in the place where the light fell from the skylight stood a loom. My aunt had been a notable spinster and weaver all her life, and was sorely tempted now by those rolls of fine, even thread, as well spun as any she had ever spun herself. The loom was warped, and there lay the shuttle, ready. But linen weaving is a careful art. If she began a shroud now, she would be at it for a long time, and much as she wanted a proper shroud, she never had been one to start a job and then drop it unfinished. So it was that she kept worrying about what would become of me. But she had already made up her mind to leave the housework undone, since housework is never done anyhow, and now she admitted that she must let other people see to her winding sheet. She hoped she could trust me to choose a clean sheet, at least, and a well-patched one. But she could not resist picking up the end thread of one of the distaffs and feeding out a length between her thumb and finger to test it for evenness and strength, and she kept the thread running between thumb and finger as she walked on. It was well that she did so, as the new room opened onto a corridor along which were many doorways, each one leading to other halls and rooms, a maze in which she would certainly have lost her way but for the thread of flax. The rooms were clean, a little dusty, and unfurnished. In one of them, my aunt found a toy lying on the floor, a wooden horse. It was crudely carved, the forelegs all of a piece, and the hind legs the same, a kind of a two-legged horse with round, flat eyes, which she thought she remembered, though she was not sure. In another long, narrow room, many unused kitchen tools and pans lay on a counter and three horn buttons in a row. At the end of a long corridor into which she was drawn by a gleam or a reflection at the far end, there stood an engine of some kind, which was certainly nothing my aunt had ever seen before. In one small room, with no skylight, an intense, pungent smell hung in the air, filling up the room like a living creature caught in it. My aunt left that room hurriedly, upset. Though her curiosity had been roused by finding all these rooms she had not known in her house, her explorations and the silence brought on her a sense of oppression and unease. She stood for a moment outside the door of the room where the strong smell was, making up her mind. That never took her long. She began to follow the thread back, winding it about the fingers of her left hand as she took it up. This process needed more attention than the paying out, and lifting her eyes from a tangle in the thread, she was puzzled to find herself in a room which she did not recall passing through, but could hardly have crossed without noticing, for it was very large. The walls were of a beautiful, fine-grained stone of a pale gray hue, in which certain figures like astrologers' charts of the constellations, fine lines connecting stars or clusters of stars, were inlaid in gold wire. The ceiling was light and high, the floor of worn dark marble. It was like a church, my aunt thought, but not a religious church. That is what she thought. The patterns on the walls were like the illustrations in books of learning, and the room itself was like the hall of the great library in the city. There were no books, but the place was majestic and reposeful, having about it a collected stillness very pleasant to the spirit of my aunt. She was tired of walking and decided to rest there. She sat down, since there was no furniture, on the floor in the corner nearest the door to which the thread had led her. My aunt was a woman who liked a wall at her back. The invasions had left her uneasy in open spaces, always looking over her shoulder. Though who could hurt her now, as she said to herself, sitting down? But, as she said to herself, you never can be sure. The lines of gold wire on the walls led her eye along them as she sat resting. Some of the figures they made seemed familiar. She began to think that these figures or patterns were a map of the maze which she was in, the wires representing passages and the stars, rooms. Or perhaps the stars represented the doors into rooms, the walls of which were not outlined. She could pretty certainly retrace the first corridor back to the room of the distaffs, but on the far side of that, where the old part of our house ought to be, the patterns continued, looking a good deal more like the familiar constellations of the sky in early winter. She was not certain she understood the map at all, but she continued to study it, to let her mind follow the lines from star to star until she began to see her way. She got up then and went back, pursuing the flaxen thread and taking it up in her left hand till she came back. There I was in the same room, still crying. My mother was gone. Lacewing flies wait years to be born, but they live only a day. The undertaker's men were just leaving, and I had to follow them, so my aunt came along to her funeral, though she did not want to leave the house. She tried to bring her ball of thread with her, but it broke as she crossed the threshold. I could hear her swear under her breath, the way she always did when she broke a thread or spilled the sugar, "Damn!" in a whisper. Neither of us enjoyed the funeral at all. My aunt grew panicky as they began to throw the dirt back into the grave. She cried aloud, "I can't breathe! I can't breathe!" which frightened me so much that I thought it was myself speaking, myself suffocating, and I fell down. People had to help me get up and help me get home. I was so ashamed and confused among them that I lost my aunt. One of the neighbors, who had never been particularly pleasant to us, took pity on me and behaved with much kindness. She talked so wisely to me that I got up the courage to ask her, Where is my aunt? Will she come back? But she did not know, and only said things meant to comfort me. I am not as clever as most people, but I knew there was no comfort for me. The neighbor made sure I could look after myself, and that evening she sent one of her children over with dinner in a dish for me. I ate it, and it was very good. I had not eaten anything while my aunt was away in the other part of the house. At night, after dark, I lay down all alone in the bedroom. At first I felt well and cheerful because of the food I had eaten, and I pretended my aunt was there sleeping in the same room the way it had always been. Then I got frightened, and the fright grew in the darkness. My aunt came up out of the floor in the middle of the room. The red tiles humped up and cracked apart. Her hair and her head pushed through the tiles, and then her body. She looked very dark, like dirt, and she was much smaller than she had been. "Let me be," she said. I was too terrified to speak. "Let me go," my aunt said. But it was not truly my aunt. It was only an old part of her that had come back underground from the graveyard because I had been wanting her. I did not like that part of her or want it there. I cried, "Go away, go back," and hid my head in my arms. My aunt made a little creaking sound like a wicker basket. I kept my eyes hidden so long that I nearly fell asleep. When I looked, no one was there, or only a kind of darker place in the air, and the tiles were not cracked apart. I went to sleep. Next morning, when I woke up, the sunlight was in the window and things were all right, but I could not walk across that part of the floor where my aunt had come up through the tiles. I was afraid to cry after that night, since crying might bring her back to taste the sweetness or to scold me. But it was lonely in the house now that she was buried and gone. I had no idea what to do without her. The neighbor came in and talked about finding me work and gave me food again. But the next day a man came who said he had been sent by a creditor. He took away the chest of clothes and bedding. Later that day in the evening he came back because he had seen that I was alone there. I kept the door locked this time. He spoke smoothly at first, trying to make me let him in, and then he began saying in a low voice that he would hurt me. But I kept the door locked and never answered. The next day, somebody else came, but I had pushed the bedstead up against the door. It may have been the neighbor's child that came, but I was afraid to look. I felt safe staying in the back room. Other people came and knocked, but I never answered, and they went away again. I stayed in the back room until at last I saw the door that my aunt had gone through that day. I went and opened it. I was sure she would be there, but the room was empty. The loom was gone, and the distaffs were gone, and no one was there. I went on to the corridor beyond, but no farther. I could never find my way by myself through all those halls and rooms, or understand the patterns of the stars. I was so afraid and wretched that I went back and crawled into my own mouth and hid there. My aunt came to fetch me. She was very cross. I always tried her patience. All she said was, "Come on," and she pulled me along by the hand. Once she said, "Shame on you." When we got to the riverbank, she looked me over very sternly. She washed my face with the dark water of that river and pressed my hair down with the palms of her hands. She said, "I should have known." "I'm sorry, aunt," I said. "Oh, yes," she said. "Come along now. Look sharp." For the boat had come across the river and was tying up at the wharf. We walked down to the wharf among the reeds in the twilight. It was after sunset, and there was no moon or stars, and no wind blowing. The river was so wide I could not see the other shore. My aunt dickered with the ferryman. I let her do that, since people always cheated me. She had taken the obol off her tongue and was talking fast. "My niece, can't you see how it is? Of course they didn't give her the fare. She's not responsible. I came along with her to look after her. Here's the fare. Yes, it's for both of us. No, you don't." And she drew back her hand, having merely shown him a glimpse of the bit of copper. "Not till we're both safe across." The ferryman glowered, but began to loosen the painter. "Come along, then," my aunt said. She stepped into the boat and held out her hand to me, so I followed her.